Hello and welcome to the Swine Disease Reporting System. This is the report 79, who covers the findings of August 2024. My name is Guilherme Cesar, here at the SDRS office.
Hello, my name is Giovanni Treves, I'm with the SDRS.
Hello, Daniel Linhares, also with the SDRS team.
And today we have the pleasure to have here Dr. Hemant Naikari join the SDRS podcast. Dr. Naikari is a board-certified diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Microbiologists with 2 decades of experience in diagnostic microbiology. His work spans various fields, including livestock and companion animal diseases, zoonoses, food safety, antimicrobial resistance, and also public health. Currently, Dr. Naikari is the director of the University of Minnesota Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory. And in today's episode, Dr. Naikari will discuss the impact of collaborative projects in veterinary medicine and the importance of the veterinary diagnostic laboratories for the population. So with this introduction, welcome Dr. Naikari to the SDRS podcast.
Well, thank you, Dr. Cesar, Dr. Lynn Harris, and Dr. Trevisan. I really appreciate being here and my pleasure. Good morning to all of you and looking forward to the long weekend. Before that, let me learn more about SDRS and contribute whatever I can, but happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here, Dr. Naikari, and really appreciate your participation. So before we go for a more tough discussion there with you, Guilherme, can you provide us the highlights of this month for the SDRS?
Yeah, Giovanni, let's start as always with PERS that for this month in August remains with low overall positivity in terms of number of percent of positive submissions, with 18% of the submissions being positive. However, at the state level monitoring, Indiana, Iowa, Oklahoma, and also South Dakota are having activity above of the spectrum in terms of number of submissions.
Any comments from the advisory group about this unexpected activity?
Yeah, Giovanni, from the advisory group, what they mentioned is that this increased activity in these states could be due more surveillance tests that are performed from the herds that broke in the winter. And right now they are just testing to see if they remain positive. So that's why we are having this increasing. But the advisor alert us that if these increased positivity are coming from new breaks, that might be an issue for the winter, because right now you're going to start to have more traffic in the road and also going to start to the pumping manure season. And then combine that with more new breaks, we might have a harsh winter if this is the case.
That's a very good comment there. So we need to keep watching PERS. How about the entire coronavirus science we are that time of the year?
Yeah, I mean, still under summer effect, I would say. So we have low activity of Delta coronavirus and also PD. Just to have an idea, the overall positive submissions for PD is only 3%, and for Delta coronavirus, 0.7%. So it's not even a 1% of submissions that are positive. And at state level monitoring, when we look at all of them, they are within expected, so no increased activity in none of them.
Great news. How about the other pathogens?
Yeah, for the other pathogens, I would like to start with PCV2 and PCV3 that we are having an uptick in the winter market category and also a little bit in the overall positivity in these positive submissions. PCV2 having 48% of the winter market submissions positive and PCV3 54%. Most of these positive submissions from the winter market are from oral fluids, and the other overall are population-based samples, for example, processing fluids that are becoming positive. But one alert that we have from the industry is that we had a drop in the CT values of DEN as well. The average CT values of the submissions in processing fluids had a 2 CT drop, and in oral fluids became for the first time below the 30. So just to alert that it might be something going on in the field. And for mycoplasma, for example, we have the second consecutive month that we are having increased positivity in the winter market. And we are reaching 3 states that are above the expected in terms of activity, that is Iowa, Illinois, and Oklahoma for this specific pathogen.
So just one quick comment on the increased positivity in winter market. That's happening for PERS, PCV, and mycoplasma, right? So a lot of activity in that growth finish, kind of, biosecurity, biocontainment in that area to avoid any uptake in positivity in the sow farms as we enter into the fall.
And that's very important, because if you look for when to finish, Dr. Linhares, we have been seeing year over year, at this time of the year, we start to see that increased activity of PERS virus, influenza, and PED that starts in the when to finish. And then a couple of weeks later, or about a month, that starts to popping up in sow farms. So more than ever, is an important time to remind about these biosecurity practices in the farms to the key personnel that work there. Guilherme, what did the advisor say for us about this mycoplasma activity?
Yeah, Giovanni, for the mycoplasma activity, also the advisor mentioned that the most part of these are surveillance, because and when we look to our database, we see the majority of homogenates being submitted to fog the farms and also deep tracheal swabs. But what we saw as well that the advisor was concerned is that 35% of the wind to market positive cases, they are coming off lung samples that are submitted in the VDL, which can be associated with more clinical cases in finishing sites. And again, this increased activity raised an alert because we are in the summer. So imagine what's going on in the winter if we keep this activity of mycoplasma.
So thank you very much for those feedbacks, Guilherme, about what's going on in the highlights of the SDRS. And Dr. Naikari, congratulations on your position as the VDL director at the University of Minnesota. We briefly introduced you, but for the ones that are not familiar, could you provide us a background of where you come and until you reach the current position at director of the University of Minnesota Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Travis. And then again, welcome everyone for me being here the first time at the SDRS. So it's a pleasure to be here. So in my case, I'll start from my vet school days. So, you know, I was born and brought up in India, in Mumbai, and I went to Bombay Veterinary College, which is one of the oldest vet schools in South Asia. So I did my bachelor's in veterinary medicine there, and then I did a master's in veterinary microbiology. And about 25 years ago, I came to North America. I was at Oklahoma State University for my PhD. So I worked in molecular microbiology and was working in, you know, Campylobacter pathogenesis, bacterial. That led to my interest in disease diagnostics and surveillance areas. I got the opportunity to work for Texas A&M in Texas Panhandle. So I picked up my first academic and diagnostic lab position at Texas A&M in Amarillo, which is now the lab has moved to Canyon. This is the epi, this is the main place where you have one third of the pork produced and then the beef. And so perfect place for all animal production systems in Texas. Fast forward, after being there in 10 years in Texas, I moved to University of Georgia. And at University of Georgia, I moved there as a lab director in Tifton in South Georgia, which is about 200 miles from the main campus in Athens. And there I was also the section leader for bacteriology, and I oversaw the operations at the VDL. Tifton had a lot of important strategic locational advantages because it is on Interstate 75, and that allowed, you know, it was the artery that connected north and south. And so it helped to have a lot of, different stakeholders and others out over there, such as poultry, a little bit of all animal species we could do in a rural community area. After my 7 years in Tifton, I just moved to University of Minnesota, and this is a great ecosystem. I'm very excited of my position over here. I'm overseeing the laboratory in St. Paul, and I'm also overseeing the lab in Wilmer. So between the two laboratories, this system oversees close to a million tests per year. And we have over 100 plus employees between the two locations. We are accredited by the AAVLD. We are a member of the National Animal Health Lab Network. We are a level one lab, just like Iowa State and the other labs. And we are also a member of the VetLearn FDA lab network. So great commodity groups that we serve. Our core is swine and poultry industry. But being in the Twin Cities campus, we have close to more than a million fed animals and companion animals around us. So that excited me with a lot of Fortune 500 and Fortune 100 companies in this area. So this gives a great opportunity to collaborate. And during the podcast, I can talk a little bit more about that. But that's my journey. And I've been here for about 6 months now. So I moved here in February. So that's a little bit about my journey before I made it to Minnesota.
Yeah, thanks for sharing the background. And you're certainly looking forward to collaborating more and more with you. Going back a little quick on your experience in Georgia, we understand you had a project you kind of briefly mentioned about the rural communities, project where you work with vet students and trying to engage them in this area of diagnostics. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and talk about some of the outcomes of that?
Sure, Dr. Linares. So Tifton is in South Georgia. It is a rural community with less than 20,000 people over there. And so I had moved there in 2017. Interestingly, in the first advisory board meeting where the college had the academicians and then the stakeholders, I learned that there are very few applications from students from rural Georgia applying to vet school. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, they look at a census for over 20 years and the lowest number of applications came from that region in Southwest Georgia. And I was thinking about it like, what can I do? Because the problem is the lab is at least, to the nearest vet school from all directions, it would take at least 2 to 3 hours to get to a nearest vet school. Now these students, keep in mind, they are hungry. They want to get in the program, but there are less opportunities. So what we thought was, let's start doing something to create experiential learning opportunities. But before that, start with exposure. So how do we give exposure to our students and at what level? So, if you just give the exposure to pre-vet students may not be enough because by that time they have made up their mind what field they want to pursue. So what we started to do was let's look at building a pipeline. Pipeline starting from middle school, high school. So that was where 4-H, so started to work with the 4-H group, with the UGA extension people, and then with the local colleges. So it took some time, but over a period of last 7 years while I was there, we built a multi-institutional collaborative network. And that included a couple of HBCUs, Historic Black College University students, which are representing, they are from underrepresented areas. And that was Fort Valley State University, Albany State University, Savannah State University. So there were multiple HBCUs. And then there was Community Ag colleges. And then there was only one medical school in the area. So we tried to create a network of these. Keep in mind, this is a time when COVID just happened in 2020. And so we decided to help the community and also integrated the hospitals, the rural human hospitals, by serving them as well. So that consortium actually became big. We had almost 10 different, universities, colleges, hospitals have access to, either their access to samples, access to veterinarians, laboratorians. And so with that background, in parallel, we started to offer workshops. So these workshops were just full day workshops. We would get students in 20 to 25 students at the lab from morning to evening, and they would interact with veterinarians, with diagnosticians. We also gave in the afternoon some hands-on opportunities. And we did these workshops in fall, in spring, and summer. So over a year, at least 100 students would get to the lab. And then in the month of summer, we would offer fellowships, summer internships, which are competitive paid internships through USDA funding. So what started as a seed grant funding with support from the dean's office at that time, and then from the college, from the university, then eventually we were successful in getting a multiple federal funded grants, which allowed us to sustain that program. And in the last 5 years, over 150 undergraduate students went through these workshops. And we were able to give internship to at least 30 plus students. And that was really helpful to building the pipeline, because not every student is going to become a veterinarian, but they can be part of the veterinary animal health industry. And we started to see an impact. Like, we started to see, at least for one college that we could track, from single digit, the applications to vet school, at least at the University of Georgia, went up from 4 to 7, and then in double digits to 21.
Wow.
So if more students apply to the program, and then, you know, their applications were strengthened because they could talk about in their essays, in the interviews about the experience they got to, you know, talking about production animals. What is anaplasmosis? What is PRRS? What is the problem of feral hog in southern parts of the country? So all of that helped them. And eventually we started to see an increase in the acceptance rate of these students into vet schools. Now, also there's a good chance that these are local students, and if they get admitted into the college, their chances of getting back to the community increases, so they can come back and serve that area. And in the year 2023-24, there were, I think there were 7 or 8 students who got into vet school, either at UGA or some other schools around, but that was an impact of that program. And so, you know, and that was actually built as a multi-pronged approach, like looking at, you know, from the perspective of clinical veterinary medicine, but also diagnostic medicine and STEM in general, science, technology, engineering, medicine, because if you want to build a rural workforce, we just cannot look at one profession because they are all linked to each other. And so the goal was that let's do this as a pilot exploratory academy. And that really helped us to be successful. And I'm hoping that I simulate and try to bring that concept here in the Midwest and serve our rural Minnesotans and our rural Midwestern students who may not have the opportunities, and we give them those opportunities and get them attracted to careers in veterinary medicine. Because we need large animal veterinary medicine, we need large animal veterinarians, we need all kinds of veterinarians.
For sure.
So that was the workforce pipeline building, which started in rural Georgia, and I think we can replicate in other rural communities using the veterinary diagnostic lab as the base, especially when you don't have a vet school close to you, but you can give them some, you know, exposure over a period of time. The internships, it's not like every student who went through a workshop got into the internship, because, you know, in a year we would have 100 students go through the workshops, and then about 10% of them who really had an interest, they would come to in the lab in summer or some extended in fall. And it was a great opportunity for them to work with veterinarians. And then some of them work with, you know, veterinarians on the swine side, some veterinarians on the cattle side. So overall, I think it was I enjoyed that, building that program, and I'm hoping that we could do the same in the Midwest.
That's such a great program and great vision. That thank you for doing that. You mentioned a lot about the collaboration that we saw in those programs, and SDRS is a collaborative project, and thank you for your continued support of that. But as you step into this role at University of Minnesota, how do you see the swine disease reporting system, and what's the significance that you see this project providing to the swine industry?
I think swine disease reporting system is an excellent platform. It is sort of like, you know, it gives a pulse of the swine industry to not only the folks, say, in Iowa or Minnesota, but the swine industry in general, because we are swine abundant states, and along with the other states that are participating and providing the data. So this helps, I think, with early disease detection and reporting, just like how you were explaining, you know, what was seen in the month of July and what are we seeing in August, and how seasonal trends are there, and how these things can give you some sort of, they can be triggering points, like let's look into biosecurity, let's look into disease prevention. And so the swine disease reporting system is a perfect example of multi-institutional collaboration, multi-diagnostic lab collaboration. This data can be used for epidemiological investigations, can be used to, you know, generate future hypothesis-driven research as well. So I think this is an excellent, you know, system in place, and we need to grow it. And, you know, it started with maybe PRRS and then added other viral diseases. But I'm hoping that, you know, the SDRS is able to look into other pathogens of swine as well, the economically significant pathogens, perhaps looking at comorbidities. So I was playing with the dashboard, and I felt like, wow, this is awesome. You can check what's happening with PERS and but PERS and PED, or you know, so you can select or deselect on the dashboard. So if I am a producer, I can kind of look into my region and what's happening and how do I prepare myself. So I feel this is a step in the right direction, and this needs to continue. And the long-term sustainability of swine disease reporting system is critical, because that will help the industry in general. I'm also, one of the pluses I feel about this system is it allows our experts, our stakeholder commodity experts, to review the data and provide, you know, real-time commentary on it. And so it is a true win-win for both the veterinarians, the producers, and us, the laboratory diagnosticians, because, you know, we should be developing tests, we should be enhancing our panels, our testing capabilities based on the needs of the industry. And so I feel like a great work being done, and I'm looking forward to more multi-institutional collaborations through SDRS.
Dr. Nakari, that's great, a great answer. And talking about veterinary diagnostic laboratories, you already touched point a little bit on that, but what do you think is the importance of then, not only for the animal health, but also for the human health? What is the importance of the veterinary diagnostic laboratories?
Absolutely, Dr. Cesar. So the thing is, the veterinary diagnostic laboratory is sort of the gatekeeper. I see we are the gatekeepers for animal health for sure. But, you know, what is the origin of human diseases, human infectious diseases? 3 out of 4 zoonotic diseases are coming from animals. So if we take care of looking at it from the One Health perspective, looking at the swine health, looking at the bovine health, looking at the companion animal health, the environment, and there is always, you know, the current example of influenza, the spillover of influenza from chicken to cattle, you know, so cross-species transmission is happening. The viruses have genetic reassortments going on, whether it's the flu or others. So having the big insight of looking into human health, veterinary health, and environment, because these are all interconnected. If you take good care of your biosecurity at the farm level, it has its own potential, you know, it minimizes problems from the pre, what do you call it, pre to the post. So we are in the food chain, we can help to minimize problems with food pathogens, you know, help with food safety. And through that, some sort of a tracking is necessary. I feel these are the times where we have to look at multidisciplinary collaborations, because we are dealing with complex problems. We have close to, you know, it will be 9 billion will be the human population in the next decade, or, you know, pretty soon. And we have to feed the world. So these are grand challenges. So if we can take care of, you know, veterinary public health, production animal side, it can help with food security in the future. And so the VDLs play a vital role. I mean, think about it. If the VDLs were not there, and if we have these disease outbreaks happening, how would you respond? You know, I mean, you cannot replace the livestock that quickly. I mean, the threat that we have from a lot of these economically significant diseases, some of them may not be zoonotic, but they are such an important critical factor, like African swine fever, for that matter. You know, diseases that we don't have the country. Look at the ripple effect these diseases can have, and therefore monitoring for these, making sure that these are not entering into the country, or, you know, taking actions. And then the preventive and control aspects, like what vaccines to develop. So I feel the VDL is a perfect place where we are kind of the biorepository hub. We really need to be able to have more capacity building, and we need a lot of support from the state and the federal side if you want to maintain our, you know, our food security and you know sustainability of the industry over a long period of time, because you have to be monitoring things way before things get out of control. You just cannot be in a reactive mode. You have to be proactive and keep being intuitive of what's happening next. So we learned a lot of lessons from COVID. We learned a lot of lessons in the swine industry with the PED outbreaks. In the poultry industry, you know, we are facing the hypath for more than 2 years. So keeping track of all of these diseases, looking at different disease trends and collaborating, because we have to develop the new technologies. What we were doing 20 years ago versus today is completely different. If you go into any veterinary diagnostic lab, for that matter, you will see MALDI-TOF, which was not there 20 years ago. On the veterinary side, on the molecular side, the PCR was not there as prevalent before 90s. And now it's not even the PCR, it is a sequencing. And you know, so the more information we can gather, more strategic decisions can be made. And you know, development of new tests is critical as well. So what we are doing it as a referral lab is very important. At the same time, we should look into the future, because we need to help with early disease detection for environmental stuff or at the farm side, at the pen side. So to develop these technologies, we may have to work with engineers, we may have to work with other professions. And therefore I feel the role of a BDL is vital, because we are kind of we are the gel, we are the cement that can help to develop all of these wonderful technologies and disrupt in a nicer way.
Oh, that's perfect. And that's it, guys, for today. Amazing podcast with Dr. Naikari that talk about collaborative projects and the importance of it. And also for the veterinary diagnostic laboratories, the importance for public health and human and animal health. So that's it. And see you guys on the next episode. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a good day. Bye-bye.